It's the Lifetime Body Podcast, where science meets common sense and where we help you make your body last a lifetime. Join physical therapist, author, and human performance expert John Zombro and inquisitive life-optimizing co-host PK the Incomparable as we explore the secrets of food, movement, sleep, ergonomics, and awareness in the pursuit of ultimate wellness. In each and every show, you'll learn how to look, feel, and perform your best so that you can live your longest, healthiest, and happiest life. Welcome to episode 8 of the Lifetime Body Podcast, and today is going to be an interesting show. We're going to be talking about a couple of topics which have come up off and on throughout the years, and also quite a bit recently. And this is the first of our mailbag shows, so right away we want to say, hey, thanks a lot, audience, for giving us this opportunity to address some of your questions. And it's really a thrill for PK and I. So would you echo those sentiments, PK?
I would. Yeah, this is exciting times, getting actual questions from listeners and, Jay-Z clients. It just really helps inform the discussion in a real way. Exciting stuff.
Yeah, totally. Kind of helps us guide and shape what we're doing with the show and really how we can make these topics of ultimate wellness fit your concerns and interests. And, just a really quick housekeeping thing, if someone has a question or a comment or a topic that they'd like us to address, just email me directly at john@thelifetimebody.com. And, if you want to be anonymous, we're certainly happy to respect that. That's what happened with today's topic. And hit us up because we love doing this and that's really what it's all about.
Absolutely. And, chances are someone may have the same question and, maybe it's a big question, maybe it's a small one. I think that one thing that I've certainly experienced consuming John's ideas is sometimes they go in the face of what you've heard a lot or conventional wisdom. And so you just might want to chew it up, chop it up a little bit. And if that happens, we can do it right here on an episode. So hit John up.
Yep. And no question is insignificant. And we always try to bring that science back into it, even when we're being innovative. So today, I got up early. I took a short hike. I had a delicious omelet. I'm sipping some coffee. And it's an awesome day. But the day ends and concludes today with a book reception. And so this is the reception for the book that I recently published, Project Jacked. And it's fitting that that's happening today, and we're also taping the show today, because these topics that we received some input on, first got mentioned on the show a few episodes ago when we were talking about the release of Project Jacked. And specifically, there are two things, and that's why this is called the Moob and Booty Show.
Indeed it is.
Yeah, and so, I want to just kind of, get into that just a little bit. This is a real question that that I received, and a male listener, age 44, asked, can you go into a bit more detail about how Project Jacked moved the needle on moobs? My own moobs concern me, and I want to learn more.
And John, for listeners who may not be familiar with what you mean by moobs, it's a serious term. Could you just talk about what that is?
Yeah, it's kind of a slang term almost for man boobs. So man boobs or moobs, there's unfortunately it's the brunt of a lot of jokes, but it's actually a serious issue and a very addressable or treatable condition. So that's what we're going to get into today. And I should say right off the bat that, with anything we do here at the Lifetime Body programs, working with clients, et cetera, we don't do fat shaming. We do fat shredding, but we don't do fat shaming. So let's make sure that we preface this discussion with that parameter.
Absolutely. And so it's a real thing. It's not a joke. It is just a slightly racy term for a physiological condition that a lot of men are facing.
Yeah, so I won't use the term moobs lightly, but they are a challenge to the male body and kind of a an ever-increasing problem in our society. And, you know, there's evidence of this everywhere. You can take a look on Google, you know, you can Google up something like fraternity pictures and look at the 1940s versus today, and you'll see more, you know, men of higher body weight, and also some of that is on the chest. You see it also in the airport or the mall, or unfortunately, very sad for me, in the elementary school. So those are some of the things we're going to address today.
And really, it's just, you know, carrying weight in the, you know, the chest region and the you know, on the front.
Yeah, and this is an interesting phenomenon, because it's really a result of what we call metabolic dysregulation, and that's kind of brought about by hormonal imbalances. So, you know, this will be the underlying thing that that we'll try to explain, and it's not really that complicated anyway, but I remember a Seinfeld episode back in the 90s, watched that show all the time, and there was an episode when Kramer and Frank, who was George's dad, played by Jerry Stiller, Frank was getting a little older, and he was having some moob issues then, and he and Kramer put their heads together, and they invented the Manzeer. Which ultimately they changed the name to The Bro. And anyway, it was a funny episode. It kind of made, you know, light of this topic. But again, I think, you know, we can handle this objectively and sensitively.
Absolutely. And, you know, really they say the base for any humor, there's truth in it. So, you know, it, they went about on Seinfeld addressing it in a different way, sort of in maybe in the traditional healthcare way of just dealing with the issue after the fact. We're going to approach it from a different angle today. Get right to the root.
We're not pointing fingers and laughing, and we're not treating symptoms. We're actually going to solve the problem, treat the cause. And so
let's do it.
Here's how we go. The development of moobs, actually, it's a term known as gynecomastia, and it's primarily related to estrogenic factors. So estrogenic factors are things which mess with all of our hormones, males and females, but it affects males in this way. So it's not just low testosterone, it's the ratio of testosterone to estrogen, or T to E. So females, for example, they actually are designed to have 10 times more testosterone than estrogen. But males, you know, males actually have 10 times more testosterone than women, and their ratio of T to E should be more like 30 to 1. In other words, 30 times more testosterone than estrogen. So what happens is this modern life that we live has a number of factors. Most of them are environmental toxins, and then there are a few kind of, you know, stress-related things that can happen that a lot of these things are called xenoestrogens, or they basically, you know, cause our bodies to, you know, make some extra estrogen, or through a process known as molecular mimicry, some of these molecules look like estrogen, and it confuses our metabolisms. And so that's really how this problem comes about.
Got it. Okay. And so that's happening. What's the result then? Keep walking us through that.
Yeah. So what happens in the male body is, you know, as we go through the lifespan, it's actually a little bit normal to see a small and gradual reduction in testosterone levels, but not necessarily the precipitous ones, which are problematic. And so this lowered testosterone tends to cause a general weight gain. That'll happen in both sexes. But then the increased estrogen drives that weight onto the chest. And so that's really, you know, what's happening. If we are a little low on T and a little high on E as males, we are going to be at risk for this condition known as gynecomastia.
And interesting. That's fascinating. So, wow. Carry on, John.
Yeah. So let's talk about what the major culprits are. And so right off the bat, you know, we're going to throw out, or we're not going to throw it out, we're going to mention stress. Stress is, it's that life load that's a little too great, a little more than we can naturally handle. And so when we're under a lot of stress, it tends to alter our hormonal balance, and we'll have more cortisol, and will have less testosterone. It tends to propagate estrogen. And so stress in and of itself can be a move maker, if you will. And so, you know, that's one on our list. I'm kind of going in random order here. The next is there's a couple of food products that are extremely high in what are known as phytoestrogens. And again, those are a class of xenoestrogen or you know, promoters of this problem. And soy is big in that, followed closely by flax. And so those products are rich in these phytoestrogens, which tend to contribute to the gynecomastic condition. Next, we have, you know, all the issues with plastics. And so, you know, everybody these days is familiar with BPAs or bisphenol A. There are other classes of it, such as bisphenol S. But those are those chemicals which leach out of plastics, such as, you know, certain kinds of water bottles or food containers. And it's particularly increased if they're in the sun or heated in the microwave. You know, that's really a recipe for disaster. And so we want to be aware that those are causal factors that we can eliminate. Next is what's known as glyphosate. And so glyphosate is the active ingredient in the largest used herbicide in the world, which is Roundup. And that's really... it's known to be an endocrine disruptor and cause a few other things. Also, you know, messes with our gut microbiome. But this glyphosate, we really need to watch out for the agricultural products, which are so rich in herbicides. And that's true of most GMO products, because the reason they're GMO or genetically modified is so that they can be resistant to Roundup. And so there's high content there. Next, we've got a thing called fragrance. And so our friends at the FDA, allow manufacturers to not identify all the chemical compounds and just call something that they put in personal care products, cleaning products, air fresheners, etc., as fragrance. So you know, that's, again, very estrogenic. Then we have chronic exercise. So exercise is good for us, but it exists in that biological sweet spot. We've talked about that a little bit in the past, and we'll do more so in the future. But if a person is over-exercising, particularly doing kind of what we call chronic cardio, or just, you know, high levels of moderately intense aerobic exercise, it's popular to do that, they can kind of alter their hormone balance. Create a higher level of cortisol and a carbohydrate-dependent metabolism, and ultimately bias estrogen over testosterone. So that's a good thing to know. sunscreen, there are numerous compounds, including some benzenes in sunscreen, which have been proven to be estrogenic. And then any kind of laminate or vinyl, whether that's a flooring product or, hey, that new car smell. That new car smell is what's known as off-gassing. And so those, you know, vinyls and other laminates are they have a long half-life to give off a gas, which is estrogenic. And so if we're breathing it or touching it, you know, it's Moob City. And then lastly, or maybe it's not the only thing, but the last I'll do on today's list is sleep deprivation. And, you know, it's bad for lots of things, and I think everyone accepts that, but it also tends to alter this estrogen to testosterone ratio, particularly in males. And so, that's a short list, I think, but of very powerful things we can all do something about.
John, I mean, and just hearing you go through it, I'm just checking boxes in my own life. There's, you know, that's almost as daunting to hear. It's almost like our environment is working against us in this regard.
Yeah. Is it only the environment, or is it the dollar and big business, big sure. Ag, big farm? They're making a profit off these things, and so there's really not a lot of motivation to have us not be using and consuming these products. And also, you know, I didn't even mention this, but I thought it was a no-brainer: is drinking water. You know, if we're drinking municipal drinking water, most of those have been shown to be relatively contaminated with numbers of things, and not just glyphosate, for example, but also anxiolytic medications, birth control, etc. So filtering water is these days is really a mandatory for most of us.
Got it. So what's the road forward look like? Because, you know, we're not just going to, you know, shine the light on the factors of the culprits, but how do we, how do we solve this as men?
Yeah. So if we look at this list, and so, you know, that Band-Aid approach, and I'm not saying that sometimes it doesn't apply, but in most cases, we probably don't need to look at TRT or testosterone replacement therapy with respect to this issue. Now, there may be some other reasons. I'm not trying to, you know, offer medical advice. I don't do that. But it's removing these offenders and allowing the body to auto-regulate back to health. We're designed to do this. And so as opposed to needing to throw in more testosterone, we can simply let that come up and let the estrogen come down by removing all those things we just talked about. And it's what I call homegrown hormones. Make your own.
Got it. Okay. Keep going.
Okay. So in most adult males, if we can couple this right amount of exercise, again, looking at that sweet spot and looking at the building, growing body of literature that supports, you know, maintaining our muscle mass, our strength, speed, power, agility, balance, as well as aerobic fitness. That's important. Sound nutrition, which can take on some different shapes for different people, but it basically it's getting rid of, getting away from, you know, foods that contain some of those items that we talked about, such as BPAs and glyphosate, but also junk food. You know, so that's that devil's trident of vegetable oil, processed flours and starches and sugar, which contributes to the gynecomastia condition. And ultimately what happens when we do this is the body composition normalizes. So we start to see fat reduction, but also as the hormones rebalance, it comes off the frontal torso fairly easily, fairly significantly. We saw that in Jacked. And a thing to mention there is it's good for males anyway to get the weight off their chest because, you know, that, you know, no pun intended. We have three kinds of fat in the body. We have, and we can talk about this in another show. We've got brown adipose tissue or BAT. We've got visceral fat, and we've got subcutaneous fat. So subcutaneous fat's under the skin, and that's primarily what these moobs are. But also in the chest and abdomen, we can have too much of that visceral fat, which packs in around the organs and kind of is a disease maker. So basically, doing those things, maybe they were moob directed, but ultimately we can, you know, improve health and potentially longevity by getting rid of visceral fat. Last thing I'll mention there is some of those things, the toxins, again, like the BPAs or like the benzenes, the glyphosates, et cetera, they are stored in our fat primarily. And so when we do a sweaty workout or take a sauna, you know, research has proven that this helps us to detoxify, and we can sweat some of this stuff out, bind and excrete it through several different pathways. So good to know that, you know, this, there's hope, and there's not, your moves don't have to be a permanent situation.
Got it. So if we go back to the original question from our listener, how to move the needle on this, I'm just breaking this down for the everyman. You're saying, want to look at our exercise, get the right amount there. We want to dial in our nutrition, and just by combining those two things, and obviously the factors that, you know, like say a sunscreen or the plastics, we can, you know, through the advent of sweaty exercise, et cetera, sauning, we can start to move this out of our system and our body comp. As our body comp evolves or changes, inside hormonally, this will kind of regulate. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. And I would even respond to your comment and answer the listener's question. There are three things primarily. And these, they need to be done together and in any order. And as you indicated, sure, we need to get the right amount of exercise. That helps. You know, that's a great hormonal stimulus. We need to send our bodies the right message with food and turn on the right genes. But also it's this big thing, environmental management. And so, you know, we need to get away from, you know, plastics in the kitchen and most of the personal care products that really aren't just a few natural ingredients and so forth, so on. You know, looking at the water quality, doing that stuff, it's amazing. It works, and it works easily. It's not painful or expensive or anything like that, and we can deal with this problem, particularly for you know, the adult male, as I mentioned, and I think that's where the, you know, most of the attention is. But if I come into this concluding this topic, I'd say the tragedy is with our kids. Mm-hmm. And so, and it starts early on, because infant formula, and again, you know, we're, we certainly want to promote breastfeeding as well, but you know, formulas, it gets in there. And so infant formula, first of all, it's full of sugar, and the primary ingredient is soy. And so we've got these little boys, little baby boys, where, you know, we're feeding them soy at an early age, and maybe setting them up for failure, at least in terms of, you know, their body composition and body fat distribution. Then we've got kids that they're staying up late at night and playing video games, sucking on Mountain Dew and Cocoa Puffs. It's a bad idea to prepare a healthy family meal for the adults and then serve the kids mac and cheese, hot dogs, and soda, because they won't eat the salad. We need to deal with this, and we as the adults need to say, let's train kids to eat right. You just whip that garbage. We've got to work on this at all levels in society. Feed those kids some steak and broccoli. Teach them how to split firewood. There's a lot, you know, exactly, and I don't think we need this, you know, as I'm really going down a path here, but passive parenting. You know, so everybody's on a device, and so, you know, mom's on Facebook, and dad's on Pinterest, and the kids are in another room having the Mountain Dew while they're playing the video games. So we need to get back to a family that doesn't do that so much. And if you say, well, you know, what ultimately is happening? Well, we're not doing little Timmy a favor. If we let him lay around and eat these mood makers, he's going to get pounded on the playground, in the locker room, and the boardroom. In fact, you know, there's a lot of research that shows that, you know, people who you know, gain a lot of weight, and particularly that kind of weight that we're talking about, they receive less respect from their coworkers. They have a lower self-esteem and ultimately less earning potential in their career. And this is well supported by statistics. Totally preventable.
Absolutely. So from youth all the way up until, you know, males that have their AARP card, there are really attainable ways to move the needle on.
Oh yeah, it's a concern we have, but it's easy to deal with, and hopefully I gave you that, you know, couple pearls of wisdom, pearls of wellness wisdom to do that.
I picked up a couple, John. So let's move on to the second topic. I'm going to let you kick this off. Go for it.
Sure. So this is the Moob and Booty Show, and you know, I could have said Moob and Bootay Show, but I didn't. And you know, trying to stay in that world we're trying to live in with this, a female listener, age 38, had asked, you mentioned female participants from Project Jack reporting that they developed rounder booties over the 4 months. Please tell me more. And so here we go. Well, the booty, you know, whether you shake it or not, or view it as a moneymaker, it represents high levels of both function and fashion for both genders.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you can take your skinny jeans a little too far, and they won't stay up because you don't have a well-developed posterior. Just saying. And then also, you know, I've worked with a lot of people for a lot of years, and most people, particularly the ladies, a saggy backside isn't usually a goal. So this is what we're going to address today. And we're going to address, you know, from a perspective of anatomy and the science of training. So the buttock, you know, let's just say the glutes, they rock, they roll, they rule. It is the most muscular and strongest area of the human body, or should be. It's home of the rump roast and the round steak if you're in the butcher shop. And when my clients are on my programs, particularly, you know, the strength and conditioning programs that we design using science, they look like someone took a bowling ball, put it on a bandsaw, cut it in half, and then attached a hemisphere to each cheek.
Okay, I like it. Like literally, you're saying.
Yeah, it's just not that difficult. Again, if you know what you're doing. And so people say, well, how do I build a better buttock? BBB, B cubed. We're going to remember that. That's going to be a program, B cubed. Build a better buttock. Well, the first thing is to get healthy. I mean, always, no compromises. It, you know, it doesn't matter what we're doing. our goal is, you know, to help people solve problems in health as well as fitness, performance, longevity. But, you know, the next thing to do is improve body composition. And I'm not saying, you know, drastically that a person has to get shredded either. But, you know, for most females, if we can get them, you know, maybe at or below 30% body fat, and for most males, 20%. Those are not extreme levels. And on a program like Project Jacked, for example, that's, you know, most people, you know, get in there and do it in just a few months in most cases. It does depend on where you start. But this idea, let's get healthy, let's improve body composition, because that does help to, you know, contribute to this body shaping issue. But ultimately, we need to train the muscles for optimal development.
And how do we do that?
There are many, many ways to accomplish this task. So this is kind of the neat thing about training. You know, everyone has a different, you know, body type and training history, fitness level, experience, availability of equipment, whatever. So there's a way to create that win, no matter what. There isn't one true right, only my way. Not at all. It's helping each person to figure out their own way. That stated, what I usually try to recommend, if this is that B cubed program, which I just created that name today, I'm going to try to combine, have a person do 1 to 2 days per week of what I call power locomotion. So in effect, what that is uphill walking or hiking, or maybe even sprinting where applicable, where it's safe for them to do so. You know, they have the orthopedic health and the fitness level. We'll go into why that's valuable in a moment. And then also I like to have them do 1 to 3 days of focused resistance training in the gym or at home or otherwise. And again, that just depends on their level. You know, for some people, it might just be one power walk and one resistance workout, and that's all their body can absorb. That's fine. It'll grow over time. But for a lot of people, yeah, they can maybe even do a little more in the power locomotion, and I certainly wouldn't advocate training a body part probably more than 3 days per week, given the way we're going to talk about it. But, you know, again, there's a lot of leeway there. It's not complicated. Doesn't take much time. Doesn't take too many exercises either. So that uphill hiking or even maybe sprinting, if we can, you know, do that. And so what that would look like is somebody goes out for a hike on a hilly course. That counts. Or maybe they have one hill near their home that they walk up and down a few times. Or if they're a runner, you know, they might do that same kind of thing. The key here is, though, it's a short hill. It only takes a few seconds, definitely not minutes to run. If it's taking that long, they're probably not getting full hip extension. And that's really the key with this. We want to get full hip extension from a flexed or preloaded position. And this type of training helps to increase that overall tone in the buttock.
Okay, got it.
So then we get to like the meat of this, which hopefully everyone's been on the edge of their seat or, you know, waiting for this. It's the resistance training that builds that shape and density that we're after. And the first thing we have to do is we have to learn to recruit our glutes. And you know, I say glutes kind of generically because they're actually about 10 muscles in each butt cheek. 3 of them are glutes. So you've got the gluteus maximus, medius, and minimus. That makes up most of it. But we also have 6 external rotators and also an accessory muscle known as the tensor fasciae latae, or TFL. So 10 muscles per cheek. And, you know, if you're working with a personal trainer or therapist, coach, whatever, they need to know this. They need to be able to recount to you what are each of those 10 muscles, what's the origin, the insertion, the innervation, the circulation, closed connect chain, open connect chain function. You know, if you're a trainer, you need to do this. And also that's what helps, you know, our clients understand, well, you know, what are we trying to do? Well, we're trying to learn to recruit these muscles. And so by increasing that mind body connection, where it's like, oh, okay, this is the muscle I need to turn on, and that's what a good trainer teaches a person to do, then how do I feel that contraction? You know, you're gonna make the muscle work through range and ultimately squeeze with the muscles. So there's one thing of just doing exercises, and then there's doing them right. You know, so sometimes I'll say, you know, don't just do it, you know, do it right. And even sometimes I say, how about don't do it? So there's a lot of, you know, a lot of ways we just need to make sure what we're doing with movement and exercise and training is specific and appropriate.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Recruit, feel, and squeeze.
Exactly. And then we get into, well, okay, what are some movements? Well, the floor exercises, everybody knows some of those. I think they're okay. They're good for warm up. And so I'll usually put in one or two of those. So some examples, like if you're on all fours, we call that quadruped or hands and knees. there's hip extension. So you're either lifting a straight or bent leg out behind you. That's a decent way to activate those muscles, warm it up a little bit. The fire hydrant, you know, you can picture what that one is. Side lying, doing a side leg raise. These activate the neuromuscular system and they prime the muscle and movement pattern. So it's good to have a little warm up where we're thinking about those things you just, you know, reminded me of. We want to recruit, we want to feel squeezed, but we also want to prime into a movement so you don't jump into your, you know, like heavier, harder training right off the bat.
Got it. Okay. So we've primed.
Yeah.
Now where do we take it?
To the money. And so the money is in the weighted exercises. And although the weight can be fairly light, it's resistance work. And, you know, you're never going to build your glutes if you lay horizontal on the floor and just do, you know, light movements or stretches or whatever. And I'm not beating up on anybody's camp of movement, but that's not going to build your glutes into the level that we're talking about. So mm-hmm. I like to have my athletes do two types of training. I'll have them do some heavier strength work, and that heavier work that develops strength, you know, we'll keep it about 4 to 6 reps per set with heavier weight. And that serves a purpose. And then we also want them to do some hypertrophy training, you know, kind of the pump work. And that we'll usually set that at 12 to 15 reps per exercise. And there'd be multiple sets of the exercise. So this covers most of our training needs to maximize the glutes and their cousins.
I love it. Got it. Okay.
So then what I'll do is I'll say, well, let's set you up a program. You know, so again, we're back at like, oh, okay, this is a couple times a week, probably not on consecutive days in most cases. And I'll usually only have someone do 2 or 3 exercises in a session. And usually they're hungry for more. And they're, why don't you let me do 27 different movements? And well, that doesn't work. First of all, you know, let's get more for less. But we're going to really focus on that whole, you know, recruit and squeeze and feel. And we're going to do 3 to 5 sets of each of those exercises.
Nice. Okay.
And an advanced exerciser might be able to do, you know, 5 to 10 sets of 4 or 5 exercises. But that's a lot of glute work in one session. And you don't want to be on fire like a baboon, if you know what I'm saying.
Exactly. And you're really saying, so 2 to 3 times a week, 2 to 3 exercises per session. 3 to 5. That's not too much. That's not a complicated, basically you're saying there's gain with just a little work. There are some major gains that you can make.
Oh yeah. And if you do it right, you'll torch your glutes. And you know, that's what we need, that, you know, kind of that overreach to have the supercompensation and the response for the shaping and the growing of the musculature. So some of my favorite moves, and I think down the road, we'll probably put a video together for this and put it on the YouTube channel, but you know, the squat is a highly functional move. It's an anti-gravity move. It's critical. You know, most people's training programs, if they can do it or they need to learn to do it, some type of squat is good. Although a low back squat where the bar is a little bit lower on the back, you know, that can help with the glute recruitment a tad more in most cases. And there's a number of variations of deadlifts. You know, I don't always do both those exercises together with a lifter, but having one or other or the other in alternating, very good. But, you know, I'm going to say it right off the bat, it requires coaching. You know, I cringe because I see so many people all the time not squatting or deadlifting properly. And that's a case where I'd rather see them not do it than do it wrong, because that's where the injury risk comes from. And so you know, for decades, I've been a certified strength and conditioning specialist. And I think you need somebody like that when you're trying to learn how to properly do an Olympic lift. We don't want to blow by those things too quickly. So again, we've got that kind of lifting. Then we've got a move I call like a high step up, or, you know, a high bench, high box type thing. So it's, you know, a position that, you know, it's, you know, 16, 18, 20 inches high. So it puts the foot up on the platform at such a level that the knee is higher than the hip. And that type of position puts that stretch or preload on the glutes. So that's a nice way to train. And you can do that with very lightweight. Body weight might be enough for a beginner. But using a weight vest or a backpack, or, you know, simply, you know, dumbbell, medicine ball, you can do it that way. So we've got, you know, a basic, you know, barbell lift, whether that's a squat or deadlift. We've got this functional high step up, and there's obviously variations of lunges and whatever, but the lunges will typically be a little bit more quad focused. Mm-hmm. Then we've got a modified pistol squat. And so for, you know, a pistol squat, you know, that's where you stand on one leg. And, you know, I have my old friend Larry. He is such an amazing guy with his leg strength. He can stand there and stick one leg straight out and just squat down and touch his butt to heel over and over. I've never been able to do that, but I admire that in him. But I like to do a modified pistol squat where I'll have a person get up on a bench and maybe hold a light weight and work that movement, or even hold on to something so they get a little handheld assist, because they can lean back with the hips, hinge forward from the hips, shoulders can be forward, and they can recruit their glutes a little more. So that's kind of a cool trick. And then some other exercises that we'll sometimes use, the kettlebell swing, you know, there's a variation of that exercise that can be very glute effective. And bridging or hip lift, hip thrust, if a person can do that single leg with a weight on the pelvis, sometimes you need a little padding when you do that, but wonderful. And these are just a few of the exercises, there's many. Sometimes we'll often supplement this with maybe some standing cable or tubing work where the leg is moving in those cardinal or sometimes different functional planes to also work the glutes. But that's a taste of, you know, some exercises, and we would select two or three and say, okay, let's focus on these for a few weeks, then we'll change them up. And the key is not doing more exercises. It's just learning how to make just a few work and be awesome.
Yeah. And so when will someone know when they're doing this right?
Well, you got to finish the movement. So when you're talking about glutes, and we're looking at this terminal hip extension kind of a component, you got to go for the squeeze. And in fact, I tell people that the glutes are only one of three areas on the body where you should be able to crack a walnut. So maybe don't try this at home for folks for safety, but you know, okay. The whole idea of, like, if you can picture when you're coming up out of the hole, if you're coming up out of a squat or a step up or a deadlift or a kettlebell swing, and you finish that movement by squeezing your buttocks and tucking your pelvis and slightly externally rotating your legs, that's a natural function to that movement. You're going to 10x it, because now you're actually firing those muscles maximally and giving them the stimulus to shape and grow.
Excellent. I love that, John. That's a great, great visual, but it's also, you know, very, very practical, because I think that we can all, you know, we can all do, it's achievable. We can all squeeze to finish the move.
Yeah. And, you know, practical around holiday baking time too, when you need a lot of those walnuts. Okay. So what's the take home message, you know, with both these topics? You know, we'll wrap the show up with this. And I would say, first of all, that fitness and body shaping, they're actually easy if you know what to do and what not to do. And so that's where, you know, I think we're here in the show trying to help people. So you're not stumbling around in the dark and, you know, just wasting effort, time, energy. You know, we can make this work. It is fun. You know, why shouldn't we celebrate the joy of movement and keep it playful? You know, this, you know, that's why I'm joking about the, you know, walnuts, whatever. I mean, you know, there's times in life when we need to be a little more serious, maybe funerals, you know, whatever, but, you know, fitness is not a funeral. So form and function, those are those, you know, they're power words, and they really do go together. So I got a couple of stories that I can share with you. I love telling a story. So story number one, I had an executive I was working with a number of years ago, and he had to wear a suit a lot, but, you know, he was in that, you know, fast paced world, a lot of travel, a lot of meetings, food choices weren't the best, stress was high, sleep was deprived, and the moves were getting to the point that he was looking at a very expensive proposition, which was a new wardrobe on the horizon. So we did some of the very things we talked about. We just said, oh, let's tune your exercise patterns up a little bit. Let's get you sleeping a little better. Here's some sleep hygiene tips. And let's remove a lot of these gynecomastic influences from your life, your personal environment. Well, it didn't take very long. He dropped the moobs and he jacked up his shoulders. Suits fit better than ever. Took about 3 months.
3 months.
Yeah. So 3 months to a moobless you, possibly. Story number two. So I knew a dude, you know, he was a buttless dude. Not even a half-arsed dude, a non-arsed dude. And you know, I'm beating up on him a little bit, but he was a manorexic marathoner. You know, one of these guys that, you know, just pounds miles every day, and he's doing it so He can, you know, inappropriately manage his weight, in my opinion, because he didn't have good nutrition. But he had chronic hamstring problems. I mean, you know, it's just always there's a hamstring problem. And a lot of this that was due to biomechanics. You know, his gait pattern was really ineffective. He was what we call a backseat puller. In other words, glutes were weak, and so he would hinge at the hips and typically overstride and then pull through his stance phase using his hamstrings. And, you know, sorry for getting your PT-ish in the talk there, biomechanist, but that's one of the things we look at. So it was chronic overuse of his hamstrings, chronic soreness, minor strains, microtrauma. And I said, well, this is easy to fix. All you have to do is jack up your glutes, and, you know, we might need to look, train some movement patterns, improve your stride and strike, but that would fix the problem. Never took my advice, and he still has those problems today. It's been years, and it's you know, it's just that's a story that you can't always reach and help people, even though you know, the science is there.
Sure. And John, I got a question. Why, if you had to speculate, why, you know, he asked for your help, asked for your thoughts. What was the hurdle to spending time on the glutes? Was that why do you think he didn't want to do that?
Well, I mean, then you get, it gets deep, you know, it's a rabbit hole of sports psychology, because you've got behavior change, and you've got, sure, you know, people have needs to be right and not be wrong, you know, those kinds of things. And, you know, we try not to work in those absolutes, but really in this guy's case, he didn't want to not run. And so in other words, all of his fitness time was going out and running. And if you know, he would say to me, you know, you mean that I have to run a mile or two less every day to save, you know, the 10 or 15 minutes that I'm going to need in the gym to work on my, you know, strength, posture, mobility, stability. Yeah, that's all I'm asking for. Nope, not going to do it, because that, you know, that running is so important to me. So, you know, he's probably running himself into orthopedic demise in the long run, because if you don't fix a mechanical problem, it's just like a car you're taking on a long road trip. If it's flopping and clanking and smoking going down the road, it's not going to last as long. And the same is true of the human body.
Well, and I find this fascinating for a couple of reasons. It's not the, I mean, the booty is a very functional, necessary piece of the whole engine and the strength. And so in this particular case, it had nothing to do with how round or not, how it looked. It's all about function and a lack thereof.
Yeah. And you can, those things can be viewed separately or go together. And maybe the other side of that is, you know, is another example. So we, in Project Jacked, we had one of our female participants who, you know, everyone went by an alias in that program. She was very pleased with how her booty, if we keep using that term, you know, was rounder and firm and uplifted and, you know, those kinds of things, and clothes fit the way she wanted them to. And her emotional confidence mirrored that physical transformation. So very pleased, very happy. And that's an intrinsic lasting impact.
Interesting. And that was actually one of my favorite. This was in a newsletter towards the end that I received from Lifetime Body. And, you know, just kind of in her own words, that was kind of a revelation. So connecting the physical to just the, you know, emotional confidence and just impact there.
Yeah, and this is just it's a great example. You know, we can do some great things, have some fun with it. You know, safe and effective. That's really what you know, what training is about, and what proper you know, health pursuance is. And so that's a good way to sum up today. You know, I would say to anyone who's listening, consider some coaching or a consult to get more out of your training. That's what I do. That's what I've done for so long. And, you know, maybe I can offer you some experience that you can benefit from. So you really might want to save yourself time, energy, frustration, money as you get results, avoid injury, and have fun. And, you know, here's how you do it. Sign up today at the website. It's just a few clicks on your way to vanishing moves and an awesome booty, or any other health and fitness goal that you might have.
Absolutely. Well, and, you know, if you're looking at, you know, maybe taking 4 months and looking at your nutrition and also your exercise, really holistically, your program, Project Jacked, full of insight. The book's available on Amazon.
Yeah, and I'm right now I'm doing some support work with a number of people who have purchased the Jack book, and you know they've used the Jack support page on the website, and so I'm helping, you know, to kind of coach and guide them through their own Jack journeys. Great fun for me, and I think we're going to get great results for them. And so what I would say is, as we wrap up, is hey, thanks a lot for listeners, for giving us a chance to talk about some of your questions, and we want to respond to more. And also, if you're an iTunes listener, if you can head over and give us a 5-star review and rating, we'd love it. Really appreciate it. You know, you help keeping us going, and that's really what our goal is here, to spread this mojo of ultimate wellness.
Absolutely.
So thanks again, guys, and see you next episode.